Hey, welcome to the show.
Welcome. It is.
Are we going to be a bit more positive this time? Let's start positive.
Let's start with some great news.
Look at this. Gotham FC. They're moving to New York City, baby.
They're coming to Queens, the borough where I was born. Everybody knows it.
That was why they made the decision. Okay. But Etihad Park, which is New York City FC's new stadium, it just got a second tenant. Not bad.
Look at that.
And it's not the Junkies, bro. It is Gotham FC championship winning.
Look at
multi-championship winning.
It's New York. You got to have roommates. You can't live. You can't survive.
Oh, that's that's how poor we all are.
It's okay. It's either, you know, have roommates or marry the person you're next to right now.
Yeah. And you know what? He said no multiple times. So it looks like Gotham FC have joined, Etihad Park, which is exciting. It's a beautiful stadium. Even though it's not finished yet, we've seen the renderings. We've taken a walk through the construction. I'm really excited for Gotham. And I feel like this is a beautiful, I know they do the Queens and Queens game, which is looking like it's going to be dope.
Have
them in Queens, a football loving borough, man.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, look, NYCFC playing in Queens, the first soccer specific stadium in the five boroughs. I've said this, once the kind of confirmation that Etihad Park was going to be built, I think it's going to change the face of soccer in this country, just to have a stadium in New York right next to Citi Field, right next to Arthur Ashe Stadium.
Also, if you've never been to Flushing Meadow Park, there's soccer being played all over that place.
Right.
It is a world in and of itself. So I'm really excited to have a stadium near it. And, we got to go to the first game. It's going to be the Olympics are going to be taking place.
Yeah, dude, there's a lot going on. So it's great to see that soccer. Obviously, it's also disappointing for, Gotham fans in New Jersey that now have to have a much longer commute. And then the fans that are in New York were like, yes, I can walk right down the street, or I can take the train.
So they just swap commutes.
So,
not that worried about it. I'm sure you guys will make it.
It's positive. And there's obviously, cons to any kind of move like this when teams move stadiums. But
and hopefully this builds the crowds much bigger and the fandom much bigger. I'm excited for it.
That's the point. So shout out to Gotham FC and the big news and New York City FC with their new tenants. All right. So
let's get on to less exciting news. We got to go over the U.S. men's national team.
We do.
Terrible loss yet again. But of course, first, he's Christian Amalek.
Welcome to Cooligans Daily Live here on Yahoo Sports. And we're live on YouTube. If you want to leave any comments, go to the Cooligans YouTube and we'll highlight some of them as well. But let's
somewhere right down there.
Yeah, let's get to the USMNT. We were up late last night talking about the game with Taylor Twelman and a couple of folks. Now we've had some time to grieve. How are you feeling now so far?
Still sad. I'm joking about it a little more than I was right after the initial loss. But yeah, still sad. Even more upset, even more disappointed, I think. Just thinking about this World Cup continuing without this storyline and what it meant for just for the U.S. and the new fans. And, you know, I kept thinking about that guy who posted like, hey, my kid's never cared about soccer before, but he's in the backyard pretending he's Phil-Aaron Balogun. I don't know if that's the case.
Right.
Unless the kid's over there on the phone with pretending to be on the phone with Trump. I don't think that's the case now. You know what I mean? I don't know. I'm hoping I'm wrong, and I'm hoping that this does encourage and you know, add fuel to the fire and we get this massive, you know, bounce and bump in you know, people loving the sport of soccer. But the way we lost was so embarrassing. I don't know if we're going to get that. And I'm a little worried we might not.
Okay, that's a fair, I guess, response. I think how everyone reacted after the game. So, you know, seeing the comments from Tyler Adams, seeing the comments from Christian Pulisic.
I didn't see any of these. Okay. I turned off.
Sure. Tim Ream in tears. I think we're going to talk Pulisic in a second. But there was a wide range, a spectrum of feelings amongst the team. And so Tyler Adams had the more calm approach. You know, we'll learn from this. Christian Pulisic was a little too...
We're going to see that in a second.
Yeah, like a little nonchalant. Well,
let me see that for the first time. I don't want to...
Okay. Let's play Christian Pulisic's comments after the game.
I know you were in a lot of pain, had to be subbed off. What were you dealing with, fighting through?
Yeah, I mean, I just twisted my ankle and just sprained my ankle. I mean, it's... just frustrating to end like that, of course. But now time to rest, so hopefully it'll be okay.
So he's kind of getting flamed a little bit in the comments for the approach. Look, it's only one question; it's just one moment. But there's a little I don't know if we have Tim Ream's response because it's very his emotions are so he is a deeply like hurt by the moment and crying. He can't get the words out. And Christian Pulisic is not really the same when we expect a level of leadership, a level of care.
He was given the nickname Captain America, right? And we look at him as sort of being the face of it. Marketing-wise, I think he certainly is. On the pitch, I think we look for him to be the face of the program and the face of the project and the face of the team and sort of the first person you think of when you think of the U.S. Men's National Team. And part of that is saying the right things and having an emotion that correlates directly to what just happened. And, you know, when I think back, I know I'm going to get a couple texts for this, but when I think back, it's such a shame that the two faces that we've had in the sport are really bad at relating emotion. You know, when I think back to Landon Donovan, who, you know, we've talked to, we've had on the show, he can be
a nice guy.
He could be a bit of robot sometimes. And then you see this maybe that's not everything he said and maybe there's something else, but I look at it and I'm like, it feels a little tone deaf. And it's hard for me to say that because the guy just went through a horrific moment. You see how sad he was not being able to participate. But a part of our, football learning, part of our ability or our journey to get to the top is being able to say the things that need to be said in those moments. That's part of the game.
Yeah.
But going and having a microphone in your face and getting, a cohesive, efficient thought and emotion out that lets the fans know we're going to do better. Is part of that, and we don't have that. We've never had that.
That's not the
from the face of the team.
Yeah, I mean that's not the kind of leader he is, but the kind of leader that we want him to be. He's not that either, right? He's not just simply doing it on the pitch. He was pretty objectively outside of the first 45 minutes against Paraguay. He was pretty bad throughout the entire World Cup. I believe. I heard this last night. He didn't have one shot on target the entire World Cup. That's not good enough. Even through each game, I was kind of saying like, bro, he should take a couple shots. I mean, he did try a few times in the first game. I think he got three in the first game, maybe. But again, none on target. And like you said, this is part of the culture of growing in this sport, and it is that. It's okay to show that vulnerability in that kid. We had Christian Pulisic on the show. Nobody would say he was a very vulnerable guy and really wanted to chat and stuff and that's not me knocking on him. If he doesn't want to be that kind of person, don't be that kind of person. But you're gonna deal with some level of criticism and consequence.
And this is why
to that approach.
I think we got that from Weston McKennie.
Yeah,
we got someone who was what's the word I'm looking for here? Personable.
Yeah.
Where I felt like maybe there's, and I think this sometimes, players miss this sometimes. The way you connect to the person interviewing you is, the fans put themselves in that point of view. You know what I mean? That you talking to the camera or to the microphone, it's not you talking to Christian Alexis. It's you talking to everyone that's going to watch and listen to this. And I feel like sometimes there's something missed there, especially when you do media speak, which I think Tyler Adams, right, as great of a guy he is,
yeah,
it was 100% media speak. He was like, this is what I've been trained to say, and I'm going to say it. And every once in a while, it wasn't robotic.
Tyler Adams is not robotic at all.
You Weston McKennie felt like a conversation. Weston McKennie to me felt like, okay, I'm going to try to find some relation to you here.
Right.
And I think the fans benefited from that. And I think the fans love that interview for that
reason. But then
Chicharito, by the way, also gave us that. And you saw what happened there with those numbers. So I wait for the day where, Christian can be a little bit more, warm and open and maybe just.
It's not happening. That's not happening. That, and that isn't. I don't think
that moment was another example of that.
I don't think that should necessarily be the expectation. I mean, and I can go through a long list.
I don't think it's unfair to expect that from your superstar athlete.
You know what I mean? I mean, if we had
that comes part
if we hadn't like spoken to him and met him, yeah. We're coming at it from a very different perspective.
Everything Jalen Brunson said during the Knicks run became like,
right.
You know, they're saying that in every sales meeting, sales conference meeting you're ever going to go to.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like that. And you know what it was? It was from the heart. It was raw. It was honest. And that is something we just don't have in this sport for some reason. And maybe it's because they feel that constant, you know, negativity or that constant nitpicking at everything they do and say. Sure. So I get it. And football's a different animal than basketball and NFL in this country. But man, it's just even in that moment, I get what he says, rested. He means his foot, his ankle. But it's like, hey, God, I just feel like there's a missed opportunity there.
Yeah, I mean, I've said this all the time. This when it comes to being relatable and being personable, being activist, being on the forefront of a lot of issues, the U.S. Women's National Team
care about activists.
Does not
disagree with me politically if you want.
It's not even that, but it still takes.
Let me know where you're coming from.
It still takes a level of vulnerability and courage to do that because you know you're going to get criticized, and the U.S. Women's National Team has always done that, and I think it leads to a better product on the pitch. I think it leads to better chemistry. I don't know if it leads to better leaders.
But I will tell you this: it leads to a better connection with the fans, for sure,
without a doubt. Okay.
I want to talk about the biggest takeaway from this team at the World Cup.
Okay, so we got a couple things to grow through.
Right, we need a different one. You want me to go first?
Sure, go for it.
All right. For me, my biggest takeaway is that we believe that the U.S. Men's National Team had hit a new level, yet there's no proof of that happened. It's a 48-team World Cup. It's a 48-team World Cup. We won a knockout round. We won a round of 32. We beat a European team. No disrespect. We beat a Bosnia team that was beatable.
Sure.
We beat a Bosnia team that we should have beaten. That was no different than when we beat, you know, Algeria. We should have beaten that Algerian team. And it took an absolutely incredible goal from Landon Donovan to do that. But for me, the Bosnia wasn't the... That, to me, doesn't say we've reached a new level. That's a team we could have beaten 8 years ago, 9 years ago, 10 years ago. The moment was Belgium. The moment was this is a European, I don't want to call powerhouse, but one of the top European clubs or nations. That's who we should have beaten, and we didn't. We didn't turn a corner. We beat Paraguay. We should be beating Paraguay. Did we look good in moments? We absolutely look good. But did we turn a corner? Did we reach a new level? No. Did we move up a slight rung in the ladder? Sure, maybe. But I've got no proof that we turned a corner in this World Cup. And the more I look at it, I went home and I try to be positive about it. And I still don't see it. Against Turkey, our backups, I really thought our backups could take care of Turkey or at the very least draw and get into penalties. And then anything happens from there. Well, we couldn't
Turkey
even do that.
That was in the group stage. That wouldn't go to penalties.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like something, you know, give me a draw. Give me something. Yeah. Show me that our backups could do something. Nothing. I walk away from this saying the games that we absolutely needed to win. What do we have to hang our hat on? That we looked really good against Paraguay and we played well against Australia. If I would have told you that happened in 2012, would you be surprised? If I told you that happened in 2014, in 2010, in 2008, would you be surprised? No, we should be playing well against Australia, and we should be beating Paraguay.
I fundamentally do not agree with your just like you, literally just lack of being impressed by anything because we didn't turn a corner.
I didn't say I wasn't impressed by anything.
I'm saying just like
we didn't hit a new level.
I disagree in that the fact that we played Paraguay, we played Australia, we played and Bosnia, Turkey obviously was the backup, so it's not the best representation of I think what this the strongest team was.
So what proof do you have that we did turn into a corner?
The fact
you seem to be disagreeing with me.
That we controlled the game against Paraguay. We controlled the game against Australia. They were afraid to against us. We had complete control of the game, had the ball. Just the fact that a CONMEBOL team was nervous to play against us because they were worried about especially Paraguay, like being not embarrassed is not the word, but they were just concerned about the attack. They felt their own quality was not good enough to play us one for one. So they're like, okay, we have to bunker down. We got to be very, very defensive and we got to be cautious. Most countries do not play the United States that way. To me, I was impressed with the fact that, again, I wasn't nervous in the game against Paraguay. I wasn't nervous against against Australia. And the fact that is a... huge improvement from 2022. That the game against we only beat Iran. That was the only win we got. We most of the time in most World Cups we stumble through with some draws and miracle goals.
Stumble through,
and
we need the round of 16.
And we need other
where we lost yet again.
Yet again, but we didn't need help from other teams to get there.
So we lost in the same level, but just in more impressive fashion.
Yes.
And that's enough for you.
It's not about it being enough.
But is it
objectively true?
Yes or no, is that enough for you?
It's.
Do you walk away from this World Cup proud?
Before the World Cup, I said this is where we would get. I said we would probably get to the round of 16, and that's as good as we were. And we started playing, and we go back to the earlier episode of the show. I said, yo, the way we're playing, I think we could actually get to a quarterfinal, maybe a semi. This is the confidence the team gave you. You're disappointed. Yeah, that makes sense, because, yeah, we're out again in the round of 16. And this is where we always lose. But you were also believing, and the fact that the team got you
Absolutely.
To believe that they could legitimately get to a quarterfinal without much like resistance.
We didn't though.
Okay, so fine, but you can't take away the faith and belief that they showed you.
You ever heard the phrase "all for naught"? That's what that was. Yes,
yeah,
we looked good.
You're looking good against
a weaker group table.
But you're just focusing on the outcome, and nothing is more important than the outcome for you.
If we look at all of the last World Cups, no one's going back and go, "Oh, but we played really well against Paraguay." No one's going to say that. No one's going to add that asterisk.
I'm on TV and I'm saying it.
You have to repeat this in like 10 to 15 years in order for people to be saying it. No one's going to be saying that. It's going to be yet another World Cup where we walked away at the round of 16. To me, there was no marketed improvement. That doesn't mean we needed to win the World Cup. If we would have gone into this game, and I hate to say without Balogun, but if we would have lost this game with some dignity, with our balls in our hand, saying, hey, these were the cards we were dealt, and you know what? I don't care. Watch what I'm going to do to you. We did none of that. Flair and Balogun, for all intents and purposes, was suspended because he didn't do a goddamn thing in this game. What did he do? Zero touches, basically.
Why focus on everybody? There were a lot of
people
who were bad.
Nobody did anything wrong. We were embarrassed the midfield was embarrassed. The backline was embarrassed. The goalkeeper was embarrassed. Our forwards were embarrassed. We walk away from this game looking like we couldn't even think of how to compete against the Belgium. And that, to you, it shows improvement. Yes, there were some positives, but then when we got to the end, we stumbled so bad that, to me, it negates a lot of the improvement because it makes it look false. It makes it look like a mirage.
Don't agree at all. It doesn't negate.
Hey, what was your biggest takeaway?
I've already kind of made my point. My biggest takeaway was that there was improvement, but
we've improved significantly. Towards significantly, you still
because we won 2-3 games at the World Cup. That is not a standard practice for the USMNT.
And this isn't anything against you specifically, but I hate that is considered progress.
It doesn't matter that you hate it.
No.
It is.
But I hate that is considered significant progress.
Fine.
There's a lot of people that agree with you.
But you're saying
that
you're
is
basically
frustrating.
Saying, if we don't win the World Cup, it's all negated.
We don't have to win. The fact that nobody should walk away from that game.
It's fine. I think it's great that you have a high standard and you want more. There's nothing. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. I'm just highlighting that there. I was watching a better product than I was in 2022, and that gave me a little bit of pride in where the program is right now. That's really all I'm saying. Okay. Sure. All right. So let's move on to players who impressed you the most. Even you just said. I'm looking at right. Mm-hmm. Say who impressed you the most.
Flair and Balogun. And I'll explain why. I'll explain why. That it had nothing to do with the final game. Over the course of all of it, we had said at the beginning of this whole sort of journey into this World Cup that we wanted to see Flair and Balogun make that leap to the next level. And if you look back to where he was before, he wasn't efficient at putting pressure on the back line. He looked really good in Nations League when BJ Callahan was their manager. And, you know, they were sort of playing that connection between him, Christian Pulisic, and Gio Reyna. It looked almost like flawless, you know? It looked like they were able to play around teams as much as play through teams. And that, to me, was super impressive. And I hadn't seen that since. So I wanted to see him turn the corner where he can be the leader of the press, put pressure on the center backs, help us make those turnovers. And then the entire team to be asked to play in a counter-pressing style of trying to get them to turn the ball over in their own half, and to see him not just be efficient at that, be the leader, be able to point other players to help in the press and be sort of the start of the first defender, if you will, which is rare for an American striker to think of doing that, if they're a fancy striker, you know what I mean? A flair type striker, for them to also be able to put in that shift, I think shows me that the progress he's made at Monaco is real. I don't think that the progress is done. I don't think we've reached to the point. But to where I thought we were before, and I'd seen him where I was like, hey, man, Ricardo Pepi might be one and Flair and Balogun might be 1A. From that to where we are now, to me, he has impressed me the most. No other player jumped as high as he has.
Okay.
That's why he's my most impressive.
Okay. Yeah, I don't really disagree there. I'm going to say Malik Tillman.
Also very impressive.
I think that the goal against Bosnia and Herzegovina, I knew he, you know, could take a set piece here and there. Mm-hmm. But that
here
was
in the knockout.
That was a fantastic free kick.
I love this picture of
it. Yeah. It just so impressive. And to even the goal against Belgium, it was deflected, but the technique that he basically repeated the exact thing. I mean, it was a close mm-hmm. wall.
So it's Courtois. I mean, to
sure.
score any goal against Courtois, I don't care if it gets deflected by everyone on the team.
Sure. Especially in the game against Belgium, I thought he really, really played well, and I was pretty much the only like confident player on the ball the entire game. So like credit to him, because he wasn't. For a long time, I would probably say Gio Reyna would get the start over him. But after when we went to Germany, to see him play and seeing he scored a goal when we were there and everything, and just seeing
that was Eric Ten Hag's last match, right?
It was, yeah, yeah. Yes. This is he was incredibly impressive. Okay, where were you at?
Biggest disappointment. What do you got?
Biggest disappointment, Christian Pulisic, by far. Obviously the injury in the first game was frustrating, but then even when he did come back, he gets nutmegged against Turquía that leads to the goal. I mean, lots of people made lots of mistakes, but just simply not enough. And I know he would say the same thing. A lot of people will, but I've been seeing.
He said he's going to rest a little.
the discourse, especially in the past, when Landon Donovan decided to take a break and he didn't get called back up, and mm-hmm. the drama with Klinsmann, a lot of people criticized Landon Donovan. Some people feel like that these players are not as criticized as harshly as some of the players in the past.
Well, because the players in the past are doing all the criticism for them.
Maybe, I don't know.
You don't have to do it.
But overall, I think overall, just a very disappointing World Cup. I mean, look, they were flashes of brilliance in the first game. But outside of that, he's if you're going to be on all the World Cup commercials and you're going to do all this stuff, I mean, like, yo, you got to do more. I mean, I'm not unique in saying that. But yeah, the biggest disappointment just overall.
Yeah. For me, I'm going to just say center backs across the board.
Really?
Yeah. Tim Ream, obviously, I feel bad because I know how much it means to him, but he would tell you that was a very embarrassing outing against Belgium. Chris Richards at moment also made a lot of mistakes, found himself out of position. I don't know if it was covering for someone else or what the deal is. And I think he's very good at Crystal Palace and he's been very good for the U.S. men's national team. Both of these guys have been. But then even the backups, the fact that there wasn't anyone who put their head out above everyone else and said, hey, if you need me, put me in, where Mauricio Pochettino felt the trust. Speaking of trust, I really thought we would see Trusty come in for Tim Ream. I thought that's how bad he was playing in that first half. And even then, as much as I'm a Austin Trusty apologist, I love the guy. I think he's great, left-footed, very fast, very, knows how to get back in position even if he finds himself out. Mark McKenzie, someone who we spoke to on this very show, and I suddenly walked away with a lot more confidence in his ability. And for them to not even get a run out because maybe there was something that was happening in training or something where Mauricio Pochettino felt they can't even help us a little bit beyond where we are right now, that to me says
we need to maybe...
look at everyone again, reassess everyone, because moving forward, I think that was Tim Ream's last game in a U.S. men's national team shirt.
I think so, too.
And what are we going to do next?
I just don't share the same, I think the World Cup is a tournament, is a collection of games. They all had one really, really bad game. And McKenzie played against Turquía. And he got cooked. He made a terrible mistake that led to a goal. Austin Trusty got a goal, and it was a fantastic moment for the team, but they couldn't close out and get a result in that game. I think Pochettino saw what he needed to see.
I know he's not a center back, but also Freeman. Look, what an incredible last 18 months for this kid.
Sure.
He wasn't playing pro 2 years ago, and now he's a pro. He's in the World Cup, scores a goal. It's a lovey-dovey story. I'm with it. I'm with it all. He looked, not just physically, his eyes told me he was scared in that Belgium game. He did not know what to do next, and he was hoping the team wouldn't pass him the ball. And I remember vividly moments where, you know, Chris Richards rolled the ball over, looked up, saw he was open, rolled the ball back, still passed into pressure instead of giving it to an open Alex Freeman. So I know Alex Freeman is not a center back, but he can play center back. Sure, the whole back line. A lot of questions need to be answered after that game.
I mean, look,
you can't just say that was a bad game because that was the highest level we'd played in a very long time. And we did not look at it. It was not a friendly. There was no, oh, well, the agenda, and maybe you could look at other. But I'm the first one to say that. I don't care about the result. This one, the results matter. And you can't point at any run of passage, any passage of play where we look good as a back line.
All right. I mean, look, I'm sure.
Cantelari scored a header against three of our defenders at once.
I'm sure lots of people agree with you and share the same sentiment. The moment was too big for some of the players. I think overall the nervousness, the fear would just hit them, and they need to have that experience to know what it feels like. And it's unfortunate that it happened in a game where they got embarrassed. I mean, and look, there's a bunch of other factors, and you know, I'm always say the Trump call to Infantino is you're never gonna convince me that it didn't have an impact on the players. But I understand, like, again, especially a player like Alex Freeman was asked to do a lot, and credit to Belgium who basically said, we're gonna let the people we know who don't want the ball get the ball, and they're gonna have to make some tough decisions. Mm-hmm. And it completely works. So credit to Rudy Garcia and Belgium, because they did everything right. Okay, let's move on. One change that you'd like to see for the U.S. men's national team?
For me, it's very simple. The U.S. needs to develop a system that is our own, and I don't think it needs to look dramatically different than what we've seen.
Then we're closer to something. Yeah,
but we're not there yet. And that to me was, what is the essence of being an American soccer player? What does it mean? If I ask you, what is the essence of an Italian footballer? You'd immediately be able to tell me Catenaccio. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're not playing in that, but if all else fails, you know you can resort to that.
Yeah.
Because when you were a kid and you were coming through the academy, when you were a teenager and you were coming through the academy, you were maybe so good you were being asked to play a level or two above where you're at, or maybe you were getting a sniff at the senior team. That was somewhere involved. You were so part of your foundation involved Catenaccio. If I ask you about England, it's probably defensive prowess and maybe a little bit of a counterattacking, or being able to play with, you know, your wings, or making late runs into the box like Lampard. There's something you can pull from. Americans don't have that. And maybe it's because, I don't want to say it's like we're too new in the sport, because we were there in the first one. We finished third in the first World Cup. We've spent long enough trying to figure out what our, you know, identity is in this sport. It's about damn time we just build something that is that. And I agree with you. We're getting closer to what it is. We need to figure that out. I don't agree that the country's too big. I don't agree that we have too many ideologies. What makes this country great is that we have all those ideologies and we bring them together, and then something new comes from that. Mm. We need to figure out what that is, because when the moment got rough, no one knew what to fall back on. We did not have an identity. We did not have to say something, this is what makes us who we are. We need to build that.
Sure. And maybe in that moment of that game, maybe if a coach like Pochettino sticks around and can really kind of top down, instill some kind of a philosophy that everybody agrees on, I would love to see that.
Love for that to happen.
So for me, the one change right now is the goalkeeping situation. I don't think the fact that we had... We didn't have a confident...
This is the photo you picked?
I mean, we didn't have a confident, a vote of confidence from, I think, U.S. soccer and the men's program to be like, this is our keeper. We're sticking with him. I don't think Turner should have played in the game against Turkey. I don't think that helps the confidence of Matt Freese, knowing that he's going to be playing all the other games. I understand... the approach, and maybe you want to rest some guys or whatever. not, it's the goalkeeping situation was so iffy going into the World Cup. When we went to the roster reveal and we were asking, hey, we want to interview some players, we ended up talking to Jedi Robinson. We had a great time. We had also asked, hey, we'd love to talk to one of the goalkeepers. That would be awesome. And U.S. Soccer was like, no, none of the goalkeepers are doing any interviews.
Right. Which led us to believe that they weren't sure.
And at that time, they were like, oh, we don't actually know who is going to be the goalkeeper. And we don't want to put the goalkeepers in a situation where they have to talk about the other ones or fighting for a spot or whatever. And I understand the approach, but we can't be in that situation.
If you find out, piggybacking off of that, if you find out moving forward that Matt Freese and Matt Turner are no longer a part of the U.S. men's national team, how confident are you seeing Chris Brady, assuming that's the next one in line, starting?
I'm not in a confident place at all with I don't even know exactly who's next up that you would really kind of look at. And I'm not saying that Turner and Freeze definitely need to be
Gaga Slonina.
Gaga Slonina is one of them. There's just a few players that are just a kind of around that are not really on the radar.
Kid from Barcelona, Diego Coach.
Yeah. But how much are we seeing anything of him or whatever?
Do you feel like you've seen enough of Matt Freeze, or do you think he still deserves one more run out? Keep in mind there are comments.
Yeah. I don't think you kick him off the team. I think he still gets called up. Maybe he's not the one. He's still fighting for that number one position. Same thing with Matt Turner as well. But the fact that there isn't a solidified goalkeeper I don't know where the goalkeeping development is. It's not even about that the goalkeepers were quote unquote bad. It was just like the fact that you could tell. That the coaching staff wasn't sure exactly who the person was. But again, with Tim Howard, Casey Keller, Brad Friedel, Brad Guzan, we had an abundance of goalkeepers.
We said Nick Raimondo couldn't get on the team, and he would be the number one
We got
like 60 seconds left. Let's talk about who do you think is the one youngster you predict will be important come 2030?
I'm gonna say Kevin Sullivan. He's going to Man City next season. He's gonna obviously be on loan somewhere immediately, is my guess. And he's gonna get there's gonna be a huge amount of growth in that in these next 2 or 3 years. And I hope he could develop.
What we expect from him is true. I'm gonna say Josh Winder, just because I said we need new center backs, fresh new blood. And for me, Josh Winder. He's at Benfica B. I know he's not getting a ton of minutes. There's a chance that maybe he moves somewhere else. But to me, it's just like, I was trying to think of like, who's a young center back that we've heard from? The Miazgas, the Miles Robinsons, they're all done. You know what I mean? As far as can they be the next thing? Maybe this Josh Winder kid is that guy. Maybe he's that truth. He's super young. I think he's 19, 18 years old. Maybe in the next 4 years, he puts himself in that senior team position, and I would love to see some fresh blood, man.
Yeah, a lot of these players are older. Pulisic is about 27, Tyler Adams 27.
It's crazy to think about that.
Yeah. And next World Cup, some of them are on the bubble of like, they may not be called back in.
Pulisic might be a bench player come next World Cup.
We shall see. All right.
Which is why we think I need a World Cup every 2 years. Let's go to comments.
Let's see.
If you think this is bad, just think about the Italians who didn't get to see their team in the World Cup and have to watch Pulisic play for an entire season. You know what? You had me in the first half.
During the halftime, Zlatan was like, Pulisic, gotta do that. I'm like, bro, you're just...
That's your boy. Your boss. Sad way to go out, man. Shake my head.
For real. Same. Sadly, it doesn't. We go through this every 4 years. We've improved, but we're not there, obviously. This group had a big chance to make a big difference, but slipped on the banana, bro.
That's literally what I'm saying, man. Okay. Even if I'm disappointed, still just want to say very proud of the U.S. national team. I still believe in the road to 2030.
Let's go. El jefe, not jefe. Let's go.
I get it. Pulisic is not a leader. If he is, he's too quiet. I prefer to have a loud leader that shows it.
A loud leader that screams at desk to clear the ball, right? That moment should never happen. There should be some communication.
Just tells desk, I'm subbing you out. I don't care.
I want someone who is outspoken like Vinny Jr. and Mbappe.
Matumbo, they're calling him or something like that. What's
the
his
dictator,
name?
The dictator. And obviously, he had to deal with that racist Paraguayan politician that was saying being crazy. His response was great. Don't get me wrong. I'm proud of the team, and I'll never abandon them, but we got to do something. Have that fight like Sebastian Berhalter. Not qualifying for 2018 World Cup hurts worse.
I walk away from this saying, okay, we went up a little bit. not enough for me, at least not as much as I thought we were gonna.
Well, those are two different things. So, all right, we will. We got a lot more to talk about. The World Cup is currently going on. Argentina's playing, and we'll talk about a few other games. All right, we'll be back after this, everybody.
Hey, welcome back to the Cooligans.
We just got some update. We just saw Egypt is up 1-0 against Argentina.
Just as we all predicted.
Messi missing a penalty. A lot going on. So crazy. Yeah. We will see what the result of that is afterwards. But wow.
Portugal fans are rooting while wearing...
today, I feel like Egypt.
Let's talk about the worst coaching decision that you've seen in this World Cup. Not from the U.S. men's national team only, just...
Yeah, so collectively, so yeah, let's look at a kind of big picture. I'm going to say Germany losing to Paraguay in penalties and the moment where Joshua Kimmich is asking who's just going to take the fifth penalty or whatever. So Nagelsmann, if you... I mean, you don't have a lot of time with these players. This, you got to sort this out. Before the
World
Cup.
How do you not have a list?
How do you not have a list? Why are you? It's not on the fly. Maybe they underestimated Paraguay. Maybe they didn't expect to be in that situation.
Why isn't your captain just saying you're next?
Sure.
You want to take a penalty? Is crazy.
Give him the authority to assign if that is what you want to delegate. But one of the wildest situations. I mean these. Unbelievably intense pressure moments. You want to remove as much of the pressure as possible by just saying, "Okay, don't think about it. It's going to be you." This is in the locker room before the game. Raise your hand. What's the order if we go to penalties?
We still talk about Scottie Pippen not wanting to, you know, go into a game in the playoffs, and that's like damaged his career. That should not wanting to take a penalty in a World Cup. To me, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's kind of...
When you're a kid, is that what you dream of in the backyard?
I mean, it is a lot of pressure, and some players are more built for it than others. I understand if somebody's like doesn't...
You kind of know what you're signing up for.
I mean, I can understand...
This isn't war. You're not going to die.
I can understand maybe one guy being like, nah, I can't do it. But it was like four.
I'll give you this. A backup, an 18-year-old, or the other goalkeeper. I could understand them going like, I just got in here. What do you want me to be the next one?
Right.
I could understand that. But three guys in a row going, nah, not me, is crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That moment, yeah. So I'm going to put that on Nagelsmann for not sorting that out before. That moment should never even happen.
Yeah. For me, I'm going to say my worst decision is Roberto Martinez not deciding to start Gonzalo Ramos. When he came in, we saw how good he was. If Roberto Martinez wants to live in a world, I just think he wants to be friends with Cristiano Ronaldo. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He's like, yo, the guy's got a nice place in Saudi, bro. I want to hang out with him because I can't think of any other decision. Even honoring this man's legacy, this is his last World Cup, I think calls for him to be benched so he can come in as a sub and provide something good for the team. And we didn't see him provide much for the squad as a starter, especially leaving him in for so long in that last game. At some point, you have to say to yourself, we stand a better chance with Gonzalo Ramos because he's younger, more active, and plays the role that I'm asking Cristiano Ronaldo to do that's not built for him.
Yeah.
And at some point, you have to be the one with the cojones to do it. And he did not make that decision, and that's why he's out of the World Cup.
And bro, you're quoting Troy Deeney, okay. Oh,
cojones is a Spanish word, and he didn't even know what it meant, but he said it. We had him on the show, we asked him.
So let's move on. Let's go to player of the tournament so far.
Yeah.
For me...
Let me fix my shirt while you do that, because this is annoying me. I just saw it on camera. Go ahead.
I'm gonna say Michael Olise. I think he's been fantastic for France, and there's been... he has not scored yet, but he has a couple assists. And
he's looked incredible.
He looks, I think, best player at this World Cup by far. Just so confident on the ball.
I don't think he would have started if he stayed at Crystal Palace.
Yeah, this is, I've seen, who did I saw? I saw Michael Richards talking about this. About,
oh, really?
Like, yeah, about, not that question, but just like, why did we let him leave the Premier League? Like, he was right under our noses. I like, how did we have such a talent and just let him go off to Bundesliga? But this is the thing in the Premier League, that the pressures of the Premier League, the pressures to stay up, the pressures to make as much money to
play defensive as well.
Oh, it's really just like, all right, let's, especially, I
have to survive.
Crystal Palace. get a result. We got to survive. Yeah. Maybe we get a European place or whatever. We FA Cup. And the players are not necessarily allowed to express themselves because there's not the room for risk. I know Lise is a player like that. Leaves that kind of environment, obviously playing for one of the top teams in the world. And look at who he is.
Freedom with which he plays for.
It's also fascinating. I've been watching interviews with Lise. And he's obviously French, but he grew up in England.
Yeah.
So his French is not that strong. So sometimes French people in the comments are just like, oh, he doesn't speak well. But there's like he's so good that they're like, nah, you know how French.
They're suddenly not French anymore. They're like, no, we'll help you. Yeah. We're not going to roll our eyes at you once.
You know how the French are really snobby if you don't speak the language, but they're like, oh, they give him a real break because he's such an elite football. There's something about him. So at least for me.
I'm going to say Erling Haaland, man.
Which makes sense.
I made a call early on that I thought they would be my dark horse and I thought they would get this far. I thought they would look this good. And I kept pointing to Erling Haaland's on the team. Like, this guy might be, you know, he might be the golden boot by the time you get to the knockout rounds.
Mm-hmm.
And while he hasn't scored that incredible much, he has absolutely been the key point to get this this nation and this squad to where they are now, heading into the quarterfinals.
You say he hasn't scored the most. He's tied for the most goals in the
World Cup. But I mean, he hasn't scored the most. Like, he hasn't run away with it in the way that I thought he would.
Yeah.
I thought he would absolutely body some of the smaller nations, and they've needed him to be this good to get this far. But he is absolutely the catalyst and the reason they're that good. He's made Martin Odegaard look and feel freer because this guy makes some important runs. And having seen him in person, we went to the Norway versus Brazil game. And, dude, there's moments where I'm like, if you didn't know the sport and you looked over at him, you'd think he's checked out of the game. He's not involved. And what he's doing is he's reading the entire pitch. He's reading all their movements, and he saw those gaps in Brazil. And man, by the time he got enough information, he absolutely attacked. And that second goal, I'm still just like, I wish there was one player on the U.S. that had that capability.
Yeah, I mean, he's in just a once-in-a-generation type of player.
Look at the first goal he scores, and I love Gabriel Magalhães. You know me. I'm an Arsenal-holic, bro. But Erling Haaland makes the run to cut in front of Gabriel Magalhães after that cross is already in the air.
Yeah.
It took him two steps. Granted, his gait is huge. It took him two steps to go around and score that header. I was in awe. I watched that replay so many times. I'm in awe of his ability.
Yeah, I mean, he is that game in itself was the you know, we see Messi walking around the pitch and he does it in a different way, right? Mm-hmm. But Erling Haaland rarely touches the ball, but every touch is so effective. Mm-hmm. It's so whether he can shield the ball and pass it off to a midfielder that creates a run. Now it creates a run for like four other players,
mm-hmm.
And then Erling Haaland is also running. He makes that pass to break get a breakaway going, and then he's also part of that breakaway. He's just a ridiculous athlete to say the least. And I saw one of the midfielders, I forgot his name, on Norway in the post match interview. He just said, "Man, I'm just glad Erling is Norwegian.
That's it. For
I'm
real.
Just glad he was just you know, he has a Norwegian passport.
We got an American."
So, all right, how about
we got cow hearts you can eat in this country?
Okay, let's move on to most embarrassing exit at this World Cup. For me, I'm gonna go where I already talked about, but Germany. Germany, the expectations were so much higher. You know, the last two World Cups were very disappointing, not getting out of the group stages and losing in the round of 32. Now you have a 48-team World Cup. Germany, they were obviously a team on paper should be good enough to beat a team like Paraguay in 90 minutes in regulation, and they just could not. They got the moment of the World Cup, and they got CONMEBOL, and they did every... Yeah, you know, Paraguay, every trick in the book to get under people's skin and whatever. And it worked completely. And then they have a goalkeeper that was incredible at penalties, and they're knocked out of the tournament. But it's not as equally as embarrassing as getting grouped, but I mean, it's literally the closest thing to it. So yeah, really, really poor from Germany.
For me, I'm going to say Uruguay. Man, you know, the way Brutal. I feel that the U.S. didn't really earn that next level. Uruguay dropped a few levels.
Sure.
This was bad. You know, the one thing you can lean on with Uruguay is the garra charrua. You know what I mean? I'm going to leave it all on the pitch. I'm going to take whatever. You know, there's only 3.5 million of us, you know, that we leave it all on the pitch, whatever it takes to win. Bro, there was none of that in this World Cup.
They left the points on the
pitch. Yeah, dog. They left their footballing boots at home is what they left. This was bad across the board. And, you know, the Fede Valverde being your leader, you need to reconsider that. And when you consider that they had Tabaré for 20-plus years as their leader and their manager, and they played a very rudimentary defensive style. It was, you know, Cape Verde, I think it does a good job of it. They're a bit more advanced in the way they do it. But it was very pragmatic and very boring style. But they won, and they found ways to win. And they've won World Cups with that style. And they go out and get Marcelo Bielsa, and I thought, what a great leap forward in progress and playing a more progressive style. And man, this was bad across the board from you know, everything from the press before to the press after to being sent home on public commercial jets. Mm-hmm. All of this was an absolute embarrassment for Uruguay, and the nation is taking it serious. There's press conferences and there's investigations into what's going on. They're taking it very serious. Something I hope happens in this country.
What was it?
You guys got to take Greyhound. U.S. team.
Korea wasn't it Korea that blurred their manager in the press conference?
Which they only do for murderers and you know therapists without the THE.
Okay. Are we supposed to go to break? I didn't hear. What do you say? We're going to break soon. Real quick, we got two more. World Cup villain. Who's the World Cup villain for you?
For me, I'm going to say VAR doing the Cape Verde against Argentina. I get it. Argentina fans, but come on, yo. Somebody pull the plug out. The vibe, the story. It felt like I was watching the movie Goal, you know?
Right. It wasn't.
Anything can happen. Okay. At the end of the match, man, for that goal to be called offside was just heartbreaking.
All right.
And I'm not saying that Argentina needed to lose. Just give me one more. Give me one more positive.
Even if the game went to penalties or something.
Oh,
my
God. Game called for... The script called for this to go a different way.
We'll see.
And it did.
We'll see how Egypt's doing because they seem to be, supporting Cape Verde there. My biggest villain easily, Donald Trump. The fact that for many reasons, right? It's not just for footballing reasons, but the fact that he was involved in calling Gianni Infantino, getting the suspension of that red card rescinded. It's embarrassing. I mean, the result, regardless of the result against Belgium, it's just such a poor look on not just American soccer, but this is also going to be a problem for Gianni Infantino. I think this is after this World Cup is over. I've been hearing that UEFA officials are looking to either
investigate him,
get him kicked out. It reeks of such incredible corruption and
Glaze Fest thing is
and influence.
But you know what? They really need to reconsider who wins the Peace Prize next time.
Right. I mean, we understand. Like, we're not idiots. We understand they're hosting the World Cup in this country, and clearly the president of the United States is like, you're gonna have to do a couple things to make sure that everything runs smoothly. It's run like a mafia operation. Mm-hmm. We understand that, and I understand why he did these goofy things to President Trump to appease him, but. Ridiculous that this ends up being the story and it overtakes the loss. I mean, it's all over the news now. So I feel terrible for the U.S. men's national team players having to deal with this stuff. It's ridiculous. Okay.
You got to have some dignity.
And then most overrated team.
Portugal.
Brazil. Two Portuguese speaking nations.
Wow. Aren't you learning Portuguese? Damn.
So, but yeah, just disappointing from both of them. And and they got found out very quickly. Yeah. All right. We'll take another quick break. We'll have more right after this, everybody. Okay. Norway.
Holland way.
All right.
I have caught myself saying Holland. The country by mistake when talking about Norway.
Gotcha.
Norway. Why is that your name, though?
Is Haaland the Messi of strikers? Maybe. I mean, it's an interesting... He
seems to me like a Messi and Ronaldo fusion.
But he saves his energy perfectly for games. So, World Cup villain, Christian's hat from yesterday.
Oh, you know what's funny? I was going to say that. I agree.
It was a great hat. Shout out to CVS for selling
where we
that.
Get all of our picks.
Wait, that,
right
that was
in aisle 32.
Free advertising for CVS. Okay, so this is a okay for
Switzerland versus Colombia. Why don't we talk about that match?
Real quick, yeah, they're playing later today.
Colombia has been so stout defensively that I think this is the end of the run for Switzerland.
Interesting. Okay, yeah. I think these teams are very, very evenly matched. There's a slight kind of better attacking talent. I think the problem for Switzerland is that they're dealing with a couple injuries of Manzambi. I think he might not be playing.
The mayor of New York.
There's a few. So they might be out. Like Ruben Vargas, I had heard that he missed some of training and stuff like that. So a lot of their kind of goal scorers and really good players are not available or are sort of like on the fence. So I'm a little worried about that for Switzerland, but I think Colombia, especially, you know, it's a home game, right? For Colombia, I mean, they've been getting so much support in the U.S.
This is going to feel like they're in Medellin.
There's a little bit of a fortress almost wherever they played. The Colombian fans have traveled well. So that's, I think they should have the edge there. So,
by the way, I want to talk about Golden Boot, but real quick, halftime, still 1-0 Egypt over Argentina.
Crazy.
And there's a guy in Argentina who's involved in the Golden Boot race. So why don't we look at updated stats for that?
Yeah.
Who is currently in the lead and who do we think is going to take it all? Kylian Mbappe with 7 goals, tied with Lionel Messi and Erling Haaland. Harry Kane with 6 goals.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
Lionel Messi just missed the penalty. Could have been the leader right now. It's a tough one. I don't know. You still have to say Kylian Mbappe because you would imagine he's going to be in the final.
This is what I keep saying. They're going to go the furthest.
Yeah. So I think the fun part here in this Golden Boot race that kind of historically, it's never been this close with this many players.
Right.
The
whole story is there's no nines left in the game. Right. It's hard to find a nine. So these guys.
So that part of it is like kind of fun where they're all like competing with each other. Like I got to get an extra goal. Messi coming into the game against Jordan scoring when Messi were already through. Argentina were already through and didn't need to play. So the fact that it's this competitive and you can sort of feel like these players care about it is fascinating. I would say the only person to me that doesn't seem to care about it literally at all is Erling Haaland. The goals are coming to him.
He only cares about it if that means Norway's winning.
They didn't play against France, which, you know, he could have made a case, been like, yo, I want to keep up with him. But he's completely sacrificing whatever necessary to have Norway. And see, hearing him talk
what
about
photo.
The win against Brazil, hearing him talk about the win against Brazil, I think highlighted how kind of humble he is and how grateful he is for Norway to be in this opportunity. They're having a fantastic, fantastic World Cup.
Can we throw him this image of him in AI and see what he would look like with eyebrows?
Oh, yeah.
We want to see it.
At some point, we should show the girl that's gone viral for looking like him.
I said that to you, right? Isn't that crazy?
It's so funny.
I think Kylian Mbappe is probably a good shout. I think, to me, it's between Kylian Mbappe and Harry Kane because I feel like from this list, they're the two that are probably going to be in the competition the longest.
Yeah.
But I think it's just going to end up being Mbappe. Even though Harry Kane's very good, I feel like England is leaning on a lot of players to score.
Sure.
Where France is like, hey, Mbappe's open.
Yeah.
A lot.
Generally, the easy way, make your penalties. Messi already missed 2 penalties in this. And he's outside of hitting the post and all this other stuff, he could have a bunch of other goals. So it's kind of crazy that it's even that Messi, especially, hasn't kind of like ran away with
it. I want to say, our producer just said in our ear, why are they letting him take penalties? He sucks at penalties. All right, you said it. You said it, I'm me.
Okay. We're gonna dox our producer. We'll, we'll put his information on screen.
Personal email.
Okay.
On it. Not even the work one. You're gonna hit him in the same place he gets his gym updates.
Okay. We'll put it on some Ronaldo Reddit thread to make sure.
It's actually Ronaldo sucks at hotmail.com. I'm sorry, it's at yahoo.com.
Okay. Anyway, all right, everybody.
Does it even still work?
Thank you so much for hanging out with us. Another Cooligans Daily Live. Tomorrow is our first day off. There's no World Cup matches
tomorrow.
Oh, my
God.
So we'll be back on Thursday, Friday. I think. Who knows? But stay.
I'm a different hotel roommate.
Stay locked in. Make sure you follow us and subscribe on YouTube if you have not yet. At
hit
Soccer
the bell.
Cooligans.
Hit the hype.
Hit the hype. Do all the stuff. Thank you, everybody, for the comments. Shout out to everybody watching on Yahoo Sports Network as well. We will see you real soon. Follow us, and you'll stay locked into the World Cup. Peace, everybody. Peace.